The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
Well, today we have a special guest. He is a California native that's worked in a variety of ministries, predominantly in Northern California. He is currently serving as the lead pastor of Adobe Christian Church in Petaluma. Pleased to have join us in conversation, the lead pastor of Adobe, Sean O'Kelly. And Pastor O'Kelly, welcome. Good to have you with us today.
Thank you for having me. Excited to be with you.
I mentioned about the fact that you've spent the bulk of your life and ministry career working in Northern California, and I understand that you came first to Adobe just as sort of the worst part of COVID was subsiding. And I don't know if we can ever say that it's over with, but that said, that was an interesting transitional period for a lot of churches. This whole notion of, well, we're not going to go to church, we're going to watch church on the internet. And then some people that once things started to open back up decided time to get back in, never forsake the gathering of ourselves together in fellowship. And others kind of said, well, I like watching the Sunday service here in my living room in pajamas. How is that for you in terms of coming in as the pastor of a church as COVID was dwindling? Was that, did it have some challenges?
Yeah, it definitely had some challenges. My wife and I grew up here in Sonoma County, so we'd planted a church about 10 years before we came back, and so we were dealing with that at the church we'd planted, and you know, lockdowns and meet or not meet, be online, do all of that stuff, and so we'd been going through it, and then we came at what we thought was the end, and the church here, all the churches in Petaluma had been outdoors or online only. So we came at the tail end of that, and so really the first challenge was navigating moving the church back indoors, and it was, you know, winter time and rainstorms and just freezing while inside and not being able to see people's faces because people were still masked for the first 6 months of coming to the church. Just the disconnection that people were experiencing, we really felt that coming back to the community and coming to the church at Adobe.
You know, it reminds me of what the challenges must have been like for some aspects of the first century church. In that case, of course, we weren't being persecuted necessarily by an infectious disease, but rather by anger and hatred and misunderstanding and all that attended to the early days of the first century church, and certainly Rome persecution, things of that sort. And I wonder, to what degree do you feel as if some of what the church went through during that period of time, that not yours individually, but in the grander scheme of things in the body of Christ, that might be important lessons that we can continue to take with us moving forward?
Yeah, I think we learned a lot of things. I think studies have shown recently now like 30% of people in the U.S. left the church during that time and didn't really come back. And so that's pretty, for me as a pastor, was eye-opening and awakening of, and had we been doing a great job making disciples, that something like this could fracture us so strongly. And so we really have pivoted because of that to say, like, we really need to connect people to each other. We really need to connect them, not just to the local church, but to their faith and to Jesus. So that when trials come, whether it's easy to show up to church and worship freely, or one day a tyrannical, you know, force comes in and says you can't do this anymore, that people are still strong enough in their faith to cling to that. And so we really felt that during it of, you know, like, okay, this is what a little bit of persecution might have felt like. How can we as the church function in, you know, we had this great freedom. There's not real persecution here, you know, like there is in places around the world. And so this was just a little taste, and I think a good warning or awakening moment to understand, like, we really need to dial stuff in and make sure we're building on a firm foundation.
Perhaps it also, to a degree, I mean, it certainly had the tendency to upset everything from healthcare to global economic markets, the economy, on and on the list goes. But maybe one of the so-called silver linings, as you're hinting at, that came out of this was the way in which it sort of upset the manner in which we view church. And, you know, I think for the longest time, certainly in Western cultures like ours, it's easy to do church, show up, go on Sunday. We do it because that's what we've always done. We were raised to do it. It was less about our identity, perhaps, to some degree, and more about what we did. And so if suddenly a big interrupter like a COVID comes in and interrupts what we do, it might be difficult to get back to it. However, if the core viewpoint or understanding is from that pure discipleship position that you spoke of a moment ago, it's not something necessarily that what we do, but who we are at the core, that's a lot more difficult to abandon. And so with that idea in mind, perhaps that notion of coming back to some of the basics and understanding that just because somebody shows up and occupies a seat in the pew every Sunday doesn't mean that they walk away and exercising a vibrant, deep, profound, tactile sort of relationship with very God himself Monday through Saturday, does it?
Yeah, well, and I think it was easy before COVID to kind of be a consumer Christian or a cultural Christian and to show up, and you can go when you go and it feels nice when you go and you get something out of it. But it's still, you do it out of convenience. And when you go, you're there maybe mostly to receive for yourself. And I think probably a good portion of those who maybe fell away from the church that didn't come back were maybe in that crowd. But what we found during COVID, like, we had to pivot to doing house churches. So we weren't meeting in the building, but we found out, you know, people were still meeting in secret friend groups, these little mini pods of get-togethers. And so we said, well, let's just do that. You know, the church meets in homes and has been in house churches throughout the history of the church. So we did that and said, hey, we're not getting together maybe for what you're used to for church on Sundays, but we mobilize people to be in homes. And we saw, like, the greatest discipleship growth in people's lives who are engaged in those that I've ever seen, because they were really doing life together, being the church together, and having to, like, live out their faith without the, I just get to show up and kind of consume worship and consume preaching. And it was, honestly, it was a great period of time to kind of relook at what does church mean, what does being part of it mean, and how do we do it.
Pastor Sean O'Kelly, lead pastor of Adobe Christian Church in Petaluma, my guest today. We'll take a brief time out, come back to more of the conversation in just a moment.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
Welcome back. We're visiting today with the lead pastor of Adobe Christian Church of Petaluma, Pastor Sean O'Kelly. Now, Pastor, let's come back to our conversation from a moment ago. Not to pivot to eschatology, because I know we can, that'll be a road that we can head down and take a ride for hours. But I have to wonder, from your perspective, is there an aspect in which you felt, kind of looking back on the whole COVID experience, and not just your transition of coming to the church as a senior pastor of Adobe Christian in Petaluma on the heels of COVID, but just sort of your bird's eye view of everything, were there dynamics which seemed to suggest maybe God was also preparing us? Because I think about the urgency of the end times, and we certainly, every day you read the newspaper or go online, watch the news, and see what's going on in the world. And I think there is that growing sense amongst believers of urgency. And whether he's coming tomorrow or next week, you know, no one knows. But that sense of perhaps this being a bit of a preparatory exercise in understanding the importance. And I ask that question because one of the fascinating dynamics beyond sort of this separating of the wheat and the chaff that went on, I also found a lot of people that were walking in a intimate relationship with Christ that pivoted to being more forward and more open about their faith and had a greater sense, especially as all of us were talking. I mean, at 20-year-olds talking about, gee, what if I get COVID and die? I mean, to be pondering our mortality at that age is a rarity. And so suddenly there were those that said, gee, this is kind of a gift to the church. Certainly in my recollection, there's no time in my life where there was more opportunity and more focus on people that were afraid of death and asking questions about death and, pardon me, even bringing up issues related to the here and after, that really almost presented a unique, not only open door for the church, but maybe even a bit of a glimpse of what we might face in the future. Do you think any of that is a possibility?
Yeah, I think whether you're in the church or out of the church, Christian or not Christian, everyone has their own end time idea, right? Whether you think it's some natural thing and the earth is going to explode or melt, or you know, the Lord's coming back, whatever you're at on that, everyone has that fear of the end. And I do think COVID brought that up in people. And it did generate conversations, and part of what we saw in the houses was people who would never come to a church on a Sunday morning would go to their friend's house church. We called them house churches. It wasn't, you know, a bait and switch. We didn't trick them into it. But they would show up to those gatherings and they would have spiritual conversations and they would ask hard questions and they would pray together. And they were doing church without going to the building of the church because of that season and some of that fear and what they were feeling, and they were open to having these spiritual conversations when our people were kind of trained and ready and kind of off of that. You know, I don't know when the end times are coming. What I do know is there could be a day where we don't have the freedom to worship the way we've been able to. And we've had so many generations where we've had that freedom, it becomes easy to take it for granted how great it has really been. And I do think if it was preparation, we saw, and churches were able to pivot really quickly. And those that did, I think, did really well. And those that couldn't, a lot of churches don't exist anymore that did exist 2, 3, 4 years ago. And so I think my hope, at least, is that if it was the Lord kind of pruning back so that we have a stronger church today than we had before, and the body of believers are stronger today than they were before, we definitely saw that we, the church, could handle whatever is going to come. The church is strong. Jesus is going to make the church keep going, and no matter what happens, kind of outside forces can't stop that. And I
the gates of hell will not prevail against it. Yes, indeed. So, and you know, it's
so interesting. I think the church is strong.
Absolutely. You know, and the interesting thing, as you allude to, while certainly, you know, we can't ignore the tragic aspect of this, from the incredible loss of life to the major disruption that it had in our own country and so many others, that part of the benefit, the silver lining, so to speak, was to not only understand our ability of being resilient, but I also like that notion of sort of returning to our early roots of what the house church looked like, because in the early days, the first century church, that's all there was the house church. And that ability to not hide, show up to service, slip into the back pew, enjoy the service, and then, you know, before pastor catches you shaking hands out front, be out the front door and back to your quote-unquote day-to-day life, that instead meeting one-on-one in small groups and having that intimacy and that ability to speak truth to each other and to exhort one another, that scriptural mandate to bear one another's burdens, that kind of all played out in so many ways during COVID, perhaps is the thing that at the end of the day makes us stronger and more resilient.
Yeah, well, and even, right, churches opened back up and people came back, but there was still some kind of fracture took place in people relationally. And I think it took a little bit of time for people to learn how to reengage and reconnect, and there was a real social break. And so for us, it is that piece of trying to remember, like, okay, the relationship we have with other believers is also irreplaceable. The isolation that took place really caused people a lot of harm, and so God didn't create us for that. I think it's in Psalms, it says God places the lonely in families, and so the isolationism that took place was a real eye opener of, man, even if you're coming to church when the church is back open and it's a Sunday morning, you could still be all alone. You might as well just be at home if you're not engaging and connecting with people and sharing life with others and lifting others up and having others strengthen you. And so, yeah, I think we learned a lot during that season that we can also take into what should the church be doing moving forward, because people are desperately hungry for like authentic connection with other people, and we need it. We're just created to be in community with others.
And you know, if you think about it from a scriptural viewpoint, the relational component, where perhaps there have been large swaths of time in which we saw that as just sort of a side benefit. Oh, and isn't it nice too that we have friends at church? Perhaps forgetting the fact that at the core, this entire thing, meaning Christianity, pivots on relationship. That God so wanted relationship with his creation that he was willing to sacrifice his son in order by which we might be reconciled, restored, and then walk in fellowship with the very creator of the universe. Why? Because God wants a relationship with us. And wow, it may be in just the busyness of life, it's easy to forget such things, as I suggested earlier, because we tend to be all about what we do as opposed to who we are. But if the core, you understand that the real core message here, when you strip everything aside, it's about relationship, whether we talk about restoring relationships on the vertical or most importantly, I mean, on the horizontal or most importantly, on the vertical plane with God. That's really what it comes down to, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and I mean, you couldn't go to your gym. You couldn't go to whatever club you're part of. You lost all of it. And I think what we saw was the relational piece that people were starving for. We were able to meet that continuing by having people continue to get together in homes, and it just really showed that desire for us as people to need to connect with one another, and so we've tried to foster that, you know, moving forward as well, help people in that area.
I noticed in taking a quick look at your CV that you graduated from the School of Urban Missions, which is exciting. And although you're working in a largely rural area up in Petaluma, kind of a different world from downtown San Jose or San Francisco in a sense, isn't it?
A little bit. I wouldn't call it rural, though. It used to be way more rural. We grew up in Sonoma County, and now I think a lot of tech people have moved further north.
Your secret got out about how nice it is, huh?
Yeah, I mean, there's no better place in the world to be than, I think, the North Bay and Petaluma. And so it still feels rural, but also you have all the amenities of tech and all the stuff that goes along with that too. So I mean, it's just a great place to be.
Pastor Sean O'Kelly, lead pastor of Adobe Christian Church in Petaluma, my guest today. We'll take a brief time out, come back to more of the conversation in just a moment.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
Welcome back. We're visiting today with the lead pastor of Adobe Christian Church of Petaluma, Pastor Sean O'Kelly. Now, Pastor Kelly, returning to our conversation, let me ask you this. What degree of diversity do you find up in that part of the world? And that's going to sound like, you know, somebody speaking from the deep Bay Area. But I'm curious, as you think about parts of Sonoma County and up into Petaluma and so forth, I know that there's a fairly large Hispanic population. But give us a sense in terms of your background and training that really is designed to deal with the challenges and opportunities of diverse people groups that are coming to a church, perhaps, or that you're touching a life that maybe has never heard of Jesus, or they've only known about Jesus kind of on the periphery, didn't grow up in America, didn't grow up with any familiarity of what Christianity is all about. Are there any challenges of that sort that you're facing in relationship to the ministry at Adobe Christian?
Yeah, so, you know, I graduated from School of Urban Missions. My master's is actually in organizational leadership. And so I came, and so I'm more organizationally focused, but we came back to the area. And, you know, growing up here, I didn't grow up in the church. I wasn't a Christian. And so so coming back, I'm used to the lack of diversity in spirituality, meaning there's a lot of people here who don't know Jesus, who didn't grow up in church, just like I didn't. And so it's a significant issue. I think, like, my numbers personally, I could estimate about 90-ish percent unchurched just in Petaluma and throughout Sonoma County, probably close to the same. I mean, very unchurched. And what we've seen kind of a influx post-COVID or some younger families come into church who'd been out of the church for a long time, maybe had never been in church, have maybe their first or second babies, and they're coming to church for the first time, just felt like something was missing and drove by the church and popped in. And so we've seen this group of younger people with zero church background. We have kids coming to the church who don't know any Bible stories. You know, it used to be, even if you weren't a real strong Christian, you knew David and Goliath, you knew Daniel and the lion's den. And so these people coming now are just like I was. The first time I learned the story of Daniel in the lion's den, I was 18 years old, and I was teaching it to a preschool class right after I had gotten saved. And so we're encountering a lot of people who have zero faith background, or maybe they had a bad church experience as a kid growing up, and they've been out of church for a while, or they're wounded. And so we've just tried to be a place where you don't have to have a church background. You don't need experience to come. We just want you to come and have another opportunity to give God a chance. And that's a lot of this area. And then you also have a significant crowd that are a little bit hostile towards the church and towards people of faith. And, you know, even in some of the local schools, it's a challenge to be a young person living for Christ. You could be the only one on a school campus right now. And so teaching people how to live in that environment, how to follow Jesus, how to be faithful to him in your workplace where it might be challenging, where you might be the only person who's praying before a meal at a lunch table. I mean, that's, I think, the real challenge of this area is the post-Christian culture that's here of, you know, maybe 50 years ago, maybe even 30 years ago, there was a boom and the church was strong. And now it's a complete afterthought to the average person who's here. And I think it's really put the challenge then back on the church for people who go to churches and people who are of faith to live out their faith outside the church in every arena that they're in, work, play, you know, all of that stuff, to have to live that out and to engage a lost culture that's not looking for Jesus as the answer to their questions.
And I guess a lot of that comes down to a matter of perspective. I mean, take, for example, that 90-10 mix between unchurched versus churched. Some might look at that and be overwhelmed and think, oh my goodness, look at how few. Others, though, that are living a missional life would look at that and say, wow, what a phenomenal opportunity. That means 9 out of 10 people I meet today have either never heard about Jesus or have never made a decision or certainly never surrendered their life to him. And so, wow, talk about the fields ripe unto harvest. Let's get out there and do it. So I guess a lot of it comes down to perspective and how you approach that whole 90-10 mix.
Yeah, well, and I think some people are leaving the area and maybe overwhelmed by the challenge. And if it's not for them, that's wonderful. We really feel like God's given us a burden for this region. And my family, we've lived here. I haven't lived more than 2 hours away from the spot I was born my whole life. So Northern California has been it. And I just think I don't need to go to a mission field. I don't need to go visit a foreign country. I can step out into my neighborhood and I could be the only Christian on the street pretty regularly. And like you said, yeah, I think it's a great opportunity. I love spending time hearing the stories of lost people and trying to work in how I can encourage them that there's a God that loves them, that there's a solution to their problems if they're open to hearing about the gospel. And you know, sneaking it in a little bit. I like when people are shocked to find out sometimes that I'm a pastor because I didn't have to bludgeon them with it. You know, I'm just a normal person who's following Jesus and it comes up naturally. And I think that's a great opportunity in this area.
And maybe that's a great approach to this that all of us as believers need to be taking, that sometimes there's been the notion that you have to bludgeon people over the head. And I know that there are believers that feel intimidated. They say, you know, if I go and approach and then get, you know, dive right into the four spiritual laws, what if they ask a question I can't answer? What if they don't respond? Does that make me a failure? Is God going to hold me accountable because I wasn't successful in leading them through the sinner's prayer by the end of our encounter? Things of that sort. Instead of just saying, you know, let's take a little bit of the pressure off, that if you're just living your life as a disciple of Jesus, so much of this is going to come up naturally, whether you mention to somebody, hey, Sunday, I'm going to be busy. I'll be at church. Oh, you're going to church. What are you doing that for? And then an opportunity opens up to maybe the neighbor who you've just discovered has been diagnosed with cancer or has a wayward child. And there's an opportunity that presents itself just to say something simple like, can I pray for you? Or I will be praying for you. That there are so many opportunities that in a very organic fashion present themselves every single day if we're just in that mindset to be able to recognize them and then step into those opportunities.
Yeah, and I'm not against if the Lord calls them to put a box on a street corner and preach.
Go for it. Good. Absolutely.
That's good for that. Like, I want you to do that if the Lord's gifted and called you to do that. And I think that's wonderful. I think what we find is the average person says, like, I don't know how to do this naturally, or I don't know how to, you know, work it in. And so what we've really tried to do at the church is just teach people. This year we're focusing on making disciples, not out of the church, but teaching our people how to make disciples and how to just, like, just live out your faith, how to just be a good Christ follower. You don't have to create evangelism opportunities. You don't have to bring up your faith. It will come up naturally if you're just living different than the people you're interacting with who don't know Jesus. And you have something that they don't even know they want. And so if you live in such a way that they see that, they'll be drawn to you and the Lord will bring them to you. And so it is teaching people, just be looking out for a moment where the Holy Spirit might give you an opportunity to offer to pray for someone.
And coming back to that part of the conversation in relationship to relationships, you know, if for example, I said to you, well, Pastor, tell me about your wife, Amanda. You could tell me her favorite color, her dream vacation spot is, the kind of music that she enjoys listening to, what her favorite kind of dinner is when you take her out to dinner, things of that sort. Why? Well, because you're in relationship with her. And so you know all these intimate details. So you don't have to say, well, Craig, hang on a minute. I need to get my chart so I can answer your questions. No, it flows naturally because there's a vibrant relationship there. And I think the same thing is largely true when it comes to our relationship with Christ, that if it's a day-to-day living, breathing, vibrant thing, that it's not just about what we do, but who we are and who we know and in whom we have believed. Then when an opportunity does present itself to be able to share our faith, we can do it in a fashion that doesn't feel like it's forced or by rote, but very natural. It comes naturally. Why? Because it's a vibrant living relationship.
Yeah, well, and evangelism classes are great, but if you just love Jesus and that's apparent in your life and the way you live that out, I think that's a real draw for people who don't know Christ to come to you and to initiate spiritual opportunities, because there's just something about you and what God's done and the excitement that we as believers get to have of all that God's done for us. Like, we're aware of it. We've been gifted with this incredible thing and we should want to share it. Like, I want to tell everybody everywhere I go how good God is, because I've been so blessed and my life is so much better having known Jesus.
So you share not because you have to, you share because you get to.
I do get to, and I have the best job in the world. I get to help other people do the same thing and encourage them to do that. And so I just want everyone to get to enjoy. There's nothing better than leading your friend to Jesus. And so, like, it's great. Invite them to church. I'll give them an opportunity also. But man, I love the stories when someone is leading their friend outside the church into the kingdom, and then they message me, hey, pastor, guess what just happened? That's what we want everyone to get to experience, is that joy that comes from you participating in seeing life transformation in someone's life.
And to take some of the pressure off, I think sometimes we contextualize salvation in sort of a singular event approach. Somebody hears, acknowledges, repents, surrenders, comes to Christ. And yet if we think back on our own spiritual journey, seldom is it like that. It's, well, somebody said something here, and then I had a friend over there, and then I had an encounter that occurred here, and then I watched a television program there or a radio program over here. And so it was the slow drip, drip, drip of the Holy Spirit introducing himself into our life and beginning to then bring about that sense of not only situational awareness of the existence of Christ, but where we were or were not in relationship, and then that the conviction of the Holy Spirit coming upon us and eventually surrendering. Seldom is that while it can be a singular event. Normally it's a process, and so I would wonder if that kind of takes the pressure off in realizing that as we're sharing with people that we come in contact with, neighbors, friends, the mailman, whatever, that oftentimes we're just one of the cogs in the grander scheme of things, or the larger approach of the way the Holy Spirit is working to woo and draw someone unto himself. Do you think that's true?
I do, absolutely. And my experience is, I think, more an anomaly. The first time I ever went to a Christian church, like, I got saved. My whole life was changed in an instant, forever.
So you are the one circumstance guy.
Yeah,
got it.
I am, but the exception to the rule. Yeah, but that's not been my experience for the average person that I've encountered over my years of ministry. And so we try to alleviate that responsibility and tell people, some people plant, some people water. God causes the growth. And so you're not responsible for the outcome. You're responsible for your role, whatever the Lord puts you into someone's life for, to be that part of it. And so if it is to pray, or it is to have a conversation, or it is to invite to a church service, or to listen to a radio program, or whatever that looks like, you do your part. But you can't control the outcome. Everyone still gets to make that decision. Am I going to surrender to Jesus? But we get to be part of these people's journeys, and it's just the best thing.
Pastor Sean O'Kelly, lead pastor of Adobe Christian Church in Petaluma, my guest today. We'll take a brief time out. Come back to more of the conversation in just a moment.
And now back to Lifeline with Craig Roberts.
Welcome back. We're visiting today with the lead pastor of Adobe Christian Church of Petaluma, Pastor Sean O'Kelly. Now, Pastor, let's come back to our conversation from a moment ago. But I would wonder, though, Pastor O'Kelly, and even in your own set of circumstances, were there not ways in which there was maybe not actively, cognitively engaging, but at least deeper down inside of you, that there was an awareness that there was something missing, that there was a component to life that perhaps just hadn't occurred to you yet by the time you heard the gospel and responded?
I had friends who were Christian in high school invite me to their youth group, but they were just like me. So I didn't think there was anything different. I was like, well, I don't want to go to church. And at that point, I'm just like, oh, I think you have some rules I don't think I want to follow because you don't follow them. It's like, why would I go to church also? So I had the reverse of like some invites. But genuinely, it was I'd seen a person or two of faith that there was something different. One of them turned out to become my wife. And, you know, we were friends. She was really the only Christian I'd ever known who lived different, acted different, and there was something different. And so when I went to church that first time, like, I encountered that difference maker, and I didn't know it was Jesus until I had that encounter, and then my life was changed, and there was no going back.
Yeah. Tell us a bit about ministry there at Adobe Christian Church. As we mentioned, you've been senior pastor there since 2021. Give us a bit of a snapshot, folks that are maybe new to the region that are looking for a church home, or maybe the family is growing and they're looking to change things up a little bit. Tell us what they might find at Adobe Christian.
Yeah, we have the most beautiful 10 acres right off Adobe Road in Petaluma, set against the hills right now with the rain. It's been green. It's like the most beautiful time of year. So it's a great setting. We have an amazing space. Since kind of coming, we've really emphasized the next generation. I think part of what we talked about earlier is just making a place for where families can go to church. And so our staff regularly, we say, how can we be the kind of church that people with young kids can come and enjoy going to church? And so we've really focused on our kids programming. We've had just explosive growth in the nursery and preschool classrooms. And so we have fantastic leaders in those areas. We got kids in church on Sundays. Like, I'll preach right through babies crying. I love having babies in the room during church. It means the church is growing and there's life and it's vibrant. And we also have an incredible preschool. And so that early childhood education piece where we're training up kids age 2, 3, and 4 to hear about who Jesus is from the youngest age. And teachers are coming to the church on Sundays. And so we have this great cross-pollination going on between our school and the church and growth in young families. And so we really put an emphasis on children's ministry and youth ministry. Our teenagers, that group is growing as well. And we're just kind of seeing young people who maybe had never had an experience in church before or knowing who Jesus was coming to faith. We've been baptizing young families. It's in water. And so that's been really exciting to see, you know, a mom and a dad come and want to get baptized in water together as they've begun this new faith journey and really changing the future for these kids who are going to get to grow up in a Christian household and they're going to get to know Jesus from day one. And that's really our heart's mission for kids is we think sometimes the best testimony is the testimony of someone who never had to live out in the world and were spared from some of the hardships and challenges that someone like me who didn't grow up in the church had. It's just incredible to get to know Jesus from an early age. And so we're trying to make that a possibility for families. And so we're really focusing on that. And then this relational piece where we've recently launched house churches. And so so we're slowly, organically starting to have people meet throughout the week in homes. And we really focus during that time on connection relationally. There's always food present so people can hang out and have fun. And then we have discussion around the Bible. We have a Bible reading plan for our church. And we just have people chat about what they read that week, pray together, and have some food. And so it's real casual church gatherings in homes for people to grow spiritually together, connect relationally, and have opportunity to continue worship outside of the building on a Sunday morning.
Being the church, I love it. And to clarify, your Sunday service is at 10 a.m. and you don't split them out. Everybody hangs out together?
Yeah, right now everyone's together, 10 o'clock. We got enough space. It's a beautiful, the campus, we have all these classrooms because of the school. And so on Sunday, so it's just great right now. And, you know, it's trying to keep people in one service as long as we can together before we go to multiple times. But right now, yeah, everybody gets to be together. And I
love that because that whole thing of, well, now we're going to send the kids here and the young adults over there. You know, being together and modeling that on a Sunday morning, I think is really beneficial. And so I'm thrilled to hear that you're doing that. And of course, when you talk about having 10 acres, I know that there are pastors that are eavesdropping on our conversation that when they heard that kind of slapped their forehead and said, wow, wish we had 1/10 of that that we could expand into. So sounds like God has really blessed the church and you guys are heading into a dynamic, exciting new season here. Again, Adobe Christian Church is located at 2875 Adobe Road in Petaluma. You can get information on the web by simply going to Adobe CC, think Christian Church, adobecc.org. That's adobecc.org. Sunday service times are at 10 a.m. And then I imagine you guys are doing some things throughout the week, house church, things of that sort.
Yeah, right now house churches are kind of the main thing we're rolling out. And so we're pretty heavy emphasize on the Sunday morning and then in homes during the week. You know, all the other kind of programs that maybe other churches do, we're excited for those churches that do those things. For us, it really is about be with your family, be with people in your community, live your life for Christ outside the church during the week. And so come Sunday, come be part of something in a home during the week. But we really want people to continue, just live your life for Jesus, doing what you're doing. And we think that's what's best for us right now.
The relational approach to Christianity. I love it. Again, Adobe Christian Church, 2875 Adobe Road in Petaluma. Information available on the web at adobecc.org. Our thanks to lead pastor Sean O'Kelly for being with us today. Pastor O'Kelly, thanks so much for the time. It's been a delight getting a chance to visit with you.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. I had a great time.
That's going to do it for this edition of Lifeline. Thanks so much for being with us. And if there was anything you heard on today's show that you'd like to hear again or share with a friend, grab a copy of the Lifeline podcast. Simply log on to KFAX.com. That's KFAX.com for the Lifeline podcast. Our producer is Wanda Sanchez. I'm Craig Roberts. Till next time round, remember, just don't keep the faith. Get out there and share it and make it a great evening. So long.
Opinions expressed in the preceding program do not necessarily represent the views of the ownership, staff, or management of KFAX. Copyright Salem Communications, all rights reserved.
Three-star General Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.